Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
There's a few songs in there that didn't even get cleared.
Really?
They're secretly hidden in the film. Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Which ones?
Well, the Nirvana song.
Oh.
The last song that they recorded before Kurt died. Courtney Love gave it to Cameron Crowe secretly to put in the film.
Welcome to Sync Love, sponsored by SyncFloor, the podcast where we get to chop it up about film, music, and production with experts from across the media landscape. The pairing of film and music is an inspiration to creatives everywhere. And on today's episode, we get the privilege of spending time with live friend and consummate sync professional, Heather Boyd, talking about Vanilla Sky. Heather is head of sync for North America at Believe, an independent record label and music distributor based in Paris, working with artists like The Blaze, Novo Amor, Pity Biscuit, Yunaka, and more. Before Believe, she was head of creative licensing at Ingrooves Music Group. An LA native and inspired by music and film and TV at a young age, Heather recently music supervised her first indie film, Take Me to Tarzana, streaming now on Amazon. Welcome to the show, Heather. Thanks so much for being here.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So I'm super excited I get to do this. I've known Heather for a long time, and she's awesome. And one of the things, however, I did not know as we got ready for the show was the fact that she had just done her first film. Why don't you tell us about Take Me to Tarzana?
It is a very indie comedy. It stars Jonathan Bennett and Samantha Robinson. And it's about the two of them fighting against this tech company that they work for that's been spying on them and collecting data.
Very topical.
Yeah, and their CEO is this crazy Tarzan-obsessed man, and he has a pet monkey, and
Tarzan-obsessed in for real.
Tarzan-obsessed, yeah, and he lives in Tarzana.
Got it. It sounds like a fun thing to music supervise.
It was fun, yeah. It's definitely fun.
Cool, well, streaming now on Amazon, so people can check that out. So then the other kind of fun thing is that Heather is coming to us live from Costa Rica. In these times, you find people ending up in all sorts of interesting places. So tell us, how come you're in Costa Rica right now?
Well, I love it here. This is my third time and just taking advantage of the remote working situation that we're all still in, seemingly for just a little bit longer.
Yeah.
One last little remote work trip in before I start seeing all my...
That sounds pretty amazing. You know, the entire production team is jealous. We're like, why did we go meet her there?
It's nice. I can't complain. The bugs are huge.
Oh, really?
Like, the bugs are no joke.
All right. Do you have some pet bugs that you're feeding now?
We're renting out the shower. A few spiders that are
Like spiders. Okay, so I'm glad I'm here then.
I'm trying to get used to them.
Better you than me then. Okay. I wanted to jump in and ask you, so why Vanilla Sky? That's how come you chose this one?
Mostly because that was the film that got me interested in sync and music supervision. Yeah, career-inspiring film.
For those who don't know, Vanilla Sky is a remake of a Spanish film called Abre los Ojos, Open Your Eyes. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool to get a chance to watch that and then rewatch Vanilla Sky. I think you probably did the same.
I did the exact same thing.
Okay, yeah, that was pretty neat. So what did you think about the differences between the two films, especially musically?
I feel like for the most part, it was in line where it's like modern day films in the same way that Vanilla Sky is. Mm. I know there's a lot more I don't think there is any actually in Vanilla Sky.
Yeah, you know, it was this really great lower budget film, but it was super engaging. I actually ended up feeling like the music, it was in a way underwhelming. And I wonder if part of that is the comparison, because as we'll get into like the music in Vanilla Sky, you're just like, oh my goodness. And the scoring could be a little heavy handed, but the way the characters interacted was incredibly engaging in the original. But you have this remake with Cameron Crowe, who, of course, you know, you then sort of expect like, okay, this is going to be the thing. And then it starts with that Radiohead song. I remember for me, like having come out of watching Abbott and the Solos, I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be totally different as far as music. Because this song though, right? How did that hit you?
That song hit me the first time I heard it. And that was the first time I ever heard that song. In Vanilla Sky. So the beginning of that film to me already was just like, what's happening? And I was already just like in line with paying attention to music and film in a way that I never had before. Obviously music is a much more important role in Vanilla Sky versus Lee Conroe's version. But I mean, budget alone is going to have so much.
Yeah, he's going to be able to do more.
The relationships that he already had in place with artists and his reputation for.
That's right. You know, I started when I was rewatching Vanilla Sky going like, okay, so Radiohead, Red House Painters, REM, Coltrane, The Impressions, Peter Gabriel, Paul McCartney, Theory Corporation, The Chemical Brothers, Nirvana. Like I was just there going, what? Right? And then thinking about the job, right? The music supervision job, I was just like, wow.
Clear everything. Yeah.
And you know, when you talk about the inspiration that it gave you, is it something that there's sort of this like, oh my goodness, you can do something like this. And then afterwards thinking about it in the context of actually being in the career, you go back to it and think about what it means to do something at that scale?
I think that's something all music supervisors are stuck with. But I mean, that's exactly what I just went through with Taking Two to Tango. The director wanted huge songs with an indie budget. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the majority of my job was just trying to get songs cleared that would never clear, but I was just trying. It's my job, you know? But the soundtrack is massive. The CD CD at the time, CD that I still have was, you know, 15, 16 songs or something. Yeah. But the amount of songs that are actually in films, like 40 that had to be cleared. Mm-hmm. And in doing some very recent research in the last day, few minutes, there's a few songs in there that didn't even get cleared.
Really?
They're secretly hidden in the film. Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Which ones?
Well, the Nirvana song. The last song that they recorded before Kurt died. And Courtney Love gave it to Cameron Crowe secretly to put in the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's hidden in there in this weird scene that's also mashed up with another song that wasn't clear. Just over like a bunch of like weird sounds. So you can't even hear it. I could hear it. Yeah. So much music that had to go into clearing that in, I don't know, 2009. And they were probably going through I don't even know what clearing songs.
Yeah, it looked like then, right?
Looked like then. Like, were we using email to do
that? Yeah,
must have. Signing contracts.
And like calls and maybe some faxes were in there too.
Yeah. It's a much heavier job than now, where we can just like email back and forth and.
Yeah.
You know.
And even that can be painful. You know, I don't know if all our listeners know this distinction, but you have experience working on sort of both sides of the fence in the context of supervision, running Sync at a large distributor, and so fielding lots of requests for known and unknown artists, or just creative briefs, as well as in the case of Take Me to Tarzana, being on the finding end, right? What did you take away from a perspective of both those sides, especially when you were doing Take Me to Tarzana?
Yeah, that is what I mentioned before is a complaint that a lot of supervisors have trying to clear. I mean, I work for an indie company. You know, we're easy.
A pretty big one, though.
Yeah. But I'll get it cleared. I'll do my negotiations and stuff, but I don't have to go to like Phil Harney or whoever to try and get something cleared and do that whole spiel, which is what I was trying to do. So working with those artists and trying to get things cleared, especially if you're not working with a director like Cameron Crowe that like personally knows these dudes and can get stuff cleared. Yeah. It's like a handshake deal.
Right.
I feel for them. You feel for them. It's hard. Rejection is hard.
Yeah. And you're right that that relationship aspect of it that clearly Cameron Crowe brought to this film in the context of music and gravitas as somebody who has taste in music, especially in the context of film that people respect, that definitely is something that would be really helpful for the music supervisor working on it and working on licensing. So you were talking about Radiohead as being like, you heard that song in the context of Vanilla Sky. And for me, as far as Cameron Crowe, the similar thing was Mother Love Bone. I think it was a single soundtrack of Chloe Dancer, Crown of Thorns. And I remember just being like, this song though, you know, and you go, okay, this person really gets how to put these things together. And that was pretty amazing. So is there anything else as you looked at sort of the two films that you're, these are kind of interesting differences between Abramos Olos and Vanilla Sky, like as music aside?
I mean, I love that Penelope Cruz just got to do her character twice. I thought that was so crazy to me.
Yeah, I don't know, right? That it's pretty amazing.
I don't think there's any other instance where that's happened. So soon. The film only came out 2 or 3 years after the original version. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems to me like it's one of those cases where it feels like there must have been just this excitement. I think I read somewhere that Tom Cruise watched the original and was immediately calling, going, I want to make this.
I read that too. At Sundance, watching it premiere and was calling.
Yeah.
Like, when the credits are rolling, it's like, we're doing this right now.
Yeah. And so there was clearly like that kind of excitement and desire to make it happen. And I think you're right that it was cool to see Penelope Cruz in both those contexts. Like, for me, there was this kind of intimacy that was there in the original in terms of how the lead characters interacted that maybe was a little different because you have these high-watered stars in Vanilla Sky interacting, right? But given that they followed the plot fairly closely, there's a little more hopefulness in the end in the Hollywood version, like you'd expect.
It's just, like Cameron Crowe's version is just visually so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
The reference to the Monet thing and that just like being throughout the film. And there's just so many more beautiful themes, I feel like, in that film. And all the like pop culture references that you see at the end that they played out in the film.
That's right.
I feel like Cameron took that movie and then just deep dived it and like added a bunch of a bunch more art to it.
That's a good reason. Besides the music, like it was this kind of up leveling on a number of different dimensions. It was fun to see some of the things that had parallels, like in the club where they had the horizontal lights, right? Like you had the same thing but just different colors, but same, you know, just like these little things. Like it was, that for me anyway, it was very fun to watch them back to back because I think those things become really like in front of you. You go,
And the opening scene too is crazy that it is a mirror image of
Yeah.
Different cars.
Yeah.
Different city. But like the way that they follow the cars, the camera angles and everything are.
Yeah. It was like kind of an homage kind of thing, right? It was really, you speak of the opening. Another thing that struck me was the choice of the music for that Times Square scene, which was one of the ones that wasn't actually like a massive, massive star kind of thing, but it was so perfectly chosen, you know, because you have this like silent, eerie Times Square and this really chaotic feeling. I think it was Mint Royale, maybe, is who did it. And it's really, really interesting, that choice.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what that song was.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very like foreign sounding, I feel like.
Yeah. From Russia.
Hitler in there.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, is the name of the song. And it was just, yeah, very, very cool. Musically, that pairing was like one of the big moments. Like essentially, weirdly, that and then the Sigur Rós song.
Oh, yeah,
at the
end. Right. Oh, my God. Just yeah. Like,
oh, you know?
Yeah, that was, I discovered Sigur Rós from that film too, and Jeff Buckley, and it just started like changing my taste in music when I was just listening to a bunch of like emo music and hip hop in high school.
Right.
I mean, started listening to Radiohead and Sigur Rós and,
right,
you know, basically the soundtrack and actually the soundtrack all
day. Right, right. So let's say you were music supervising this film. Any choices you would have made that would have been different?
No.
You're like, blasphemy.
Yeah, no, there's no way. No, it's like, so I would never even think about that. It's so perfect to me, really. No, that's like trying to change like one of your favorite childhood memory.
Right.
No, I wouldn't do that. Just more like my favorite childhood memories, like me eating like two amazing popsicles, like give me four.
That is a perfect way of responding. Just give me more popsicles.
Yeah.
It's awesome. When we were getting ready to do this show, we talked a little bit about Vanilla Sky and we talked about the car.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the interesting thing to me is that, you know, so you were like, okay, the car. And I remember rewatching it and thinking, wait, the car was this GTO thing that was like declared a work of art and so on. But then I was like, oh, wait, no, the car, right? You were like, no, it's the Mustang. That's the
car. Yeah.
So tell us about the Mustang.
The Mustang is the Mustang.
It's the only Mustang that matters.
It really is for me. I mean, I don't understand where my weird classic car obsession came from when I was a very young child. I was making my parents drop me off at car shows when I was 11 and 12 and just like blurting out to these cars and dragging my best friend with me.
Yeah.
But I was eyeing the Mustangs. I'm pretty sure I had a Mustang book at the time.
All right.
And I saw that car and I was just like, that is the car.
That car will be mine.
66, bats back, red interior. It's perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you said that's the plan. You're going to have that car.
Someday, yeah.
I remember I told you, I learned to drive on a really crappy old Mustang. And you're like, well, then you're not so bad, Kurt.
That's not what I said. That's not what I said.
All right. I'm just teasing.
I said, you're even cooler now.
Oh. You know, I texted my friend Alex Valdez. And he texted me a picture of the model, but then he texted me a picture of the car because, you know, he's like, here it is. You know?
He still had it.
He has, I don't know if he still has it, but he has, you know, lots of pictures of it around. Yeah. And he was like, I still remember us driving around and listening to the Doors.
Yeah.
I was like, that would be perfect.
That's what I would be playing in my Mustang as well. Yeah.
Sweet. Awesome. All right. Well, I'm coming for a ride then. So what did you think of the club scenes?
Honestly, the club scenes are like so uncomfortable to me. Like, honest, I've seen the film so many times. And this last time that I watched it, I was like, I think I could skip it.
Yeah.
The character is just like falling apart.
Oh, yeah.
This other version of him where he's so horribly unhappy and taking it out on friends and the love of his life and just getting drunk and like, that club scene was never my scene either. So it was already like not a comfortable place for me to be in.
Right.
But yeah, that was not the song that was playing in Abre Tus Ojos.
I really need to work on my Spanish. The Spanish, well, you're in the right place. Yeah.
Hope it wasn't like, that massive attack song because I love that.
I don't remember in Abre Los Ojos. It's in Vanilla Sky. They played a Thievery Corporation, which like that part, I was just like, yes, Thievery Corporation. I was obsessed with Thievery Corporation. But the thing is, what I feel like was really interesting is that there are these moments, including those club scenes, where you could have this juxtaposition, right, of something that can be dark and heartbreaking along with music. Well, but you're in a club, right? And I think that's something that Cameron Crowe gets to do a lot in really cool ways, right? Figure out how to line up music that serves as counterpoint in really interesting ways, you know, and that's really great to consume, you know, it gives you a lot of perspective on scenes.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what, there's another song, it's not just the Thievery Corporation song that's playing in there. Heavy, obvious, like house.
Yeah, I don't remember what the other ones, because I think I just kind of went, Thievery, and I was happy. Pay attention. So this has been super fun, but I want to give people also a sense of what kinds of things that you're going to be up to next. So, okay, now that you've had your run on the indie film side with Take Me to Tarzana, are you going to do some more music supervising for film? What do you think?
I mean, if the opportunity presents itself, sure.
Yeah. Why not? Was there an aspect of it you didn't like doing?
No, it was so much fun and something that I've always wanted to do. And a friend of mine asked if I'd be willing to do it. And I said absolutely and made the time to make it happen. Yeah, so if someone needs a music supervisor.
There you go. The call is now out. Heather has said that if someone needs a music supervisor for their film, please call.
Yeah, I'm available.
That sounds awesome. So now we're at the point in the show where we get to do the thing that we do with all the guests, which is a question we ask. Is there a film and a scene, music that accompanies that scene, where it always gets you? Like, no matter how many times you see it and feel it, it puts you right in that place and it gets you. And that could be joy or it could be sadness or it could be whatever, but it always gets you.
I mean, all I can think about is Vanilla Sky right now. It's so good.
It could be that. Which scene is it then in Vanilla Sky? That's like the one that you're like, oh.
It's the cigarette. It's the last song.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think it just pairs so beautifully with that scene. It's like minimalist and that building emotional welling.
Yeah.
Sound that's hopeful but breaking your heart at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good one. And they do that thing so well, right? It's sort of like they were made to do that to you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel I need to check my research, but I mean, definitely at that time in 2001, cigarettes was unknown. I don't know if anyone had put any of their songs in a film yet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And there's three there.
Yeah.
And now Singeros is just all over. And yeah, they're like made.
No, you're right. Which is amazing that you can have that first experience of like, oh, wow. These folks are going to do it. And you can experience that in the context of a film. And so that's probably a great place for us to leave it off. And Heather, thank you. Thank you so much. For coming to us and spending time with us and doing it while you're in Costa Rica and sharing.
Anything for you, Kurt, always.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And so, well, this has been Sync Love, sponsored by Sync Floor. And if you're out there, keep listening to the movies. Sync Love is a co-production of Sync Floor and Electrocast Media. On our next episode, musical director Josh Rabinowitz explores how the soundtrack of Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange changed film forever. Our producer is David Tausig. Our executive producers are Mark Netter and Peter Riffles. Our editor is Cam Castro. Special thanks to Sync Floor artists Naka and Mokov and Sync Floor partner Motor Music for their musical contributions to the show, as well as designer Jeremiah Whitaker for our Sync Love cover art. Please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like this show, give us a rating and tell your friends. Until next time, I'm your host, Kurt DeBeek. Keep listening to the movies.
Electricast. Hey, it's Tim from 50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys, the comedy podcast you had no idea you needed. Join Ben, Jeff, and me as we continue our musical road trip back through the years and around the globe. See, just when you thought all white guys were like Joe Rogan, you come across three educators trying to remember when we were cool.
50 Years of Music with 50-Year-Old White Guys.
Electricast.
Ever thought about starting your own podcast? Do you have a business or a message you want to share with the world?
Well, now it's easier than ever with Electricast. Hi, I'm Mark Netter.
And I'm Peter Rafelson. We're the founders of Electricast Media.
Whether you want to start a new podcast or already have one, join Electricast to grow your audience, monetize your content, and build your community.
With our simple sign-up, you get free promotion, world-class analytics, premium ads, and personal support.
Go to electricast.com and join our community today.
Electricast. Transform your influence.
Electricast.